I can't believe I won.
And you still got people out there with double masks and face shields and shit. Look into it.
You can tell it's real because it looks so fake.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Look Into It Tonight. Former UFC fighter, former King of the Cage champion, Mr. Javi Vasquez. What's up, Javi?
What's going on?
Before there was Hoyler as my rival, you were my rival back in the early days in the 90s, doing jiu-jitsu as a blue belt, as a purple belt. we actually competed against each other four different times. You beat me all four fucking times, but one of those times. I almost had you.
I had a torn ACL at the time, and so then when you extended, he locked me down. He put me in a lockdown, and I didn't
understand. That was the fourth match. Yeah. That was the fourth one. The third one is the one I was talking about. The first one.
Which one?
The first. Well, first of all, let's take it back, and I want to talk about how I met you for the first time. Back in the day, I think it was 97 or 98. I was a blue belt, yeah. So it was 97. Up in Santa Cruz. Claudio Franca, he would do a tournament. There was very few tournaments back in the day. Remember Claudio Franca?
Yes.
There was very few tournaments back then. And me and Todd White, I've had him on the podcast. We would be the guys that traveled to tournaments. We'd go all over the place. We went up to Santa Cruz. It's a long drive. Never forget that. It was like fucking 6 hours.
Yeah.
And we get there, and me and most jiu-jitsu players aren't really like real athletes, you know what I mean? Most, we're just like hobbyists, you know, who want to compete and you know, get some experience in the competition arena. So we go up there, and we're blue belts, and everyone's sitting there waiting for the tournament to start. Everyone's waiting for their chance to get on the mat. And there's this guy, this fucking dude with a hoodie. He's got a zip-up hoodie. He's got his hood on, and he's jogging up and down the stairs, up and down the stairs. I'm like, oh, man, that motherfucker's serious. That's a real athlete right there, dog. That guy's serious. Holy shit. I hope I don't have to fight that guy. And then that time, we didn't go against each other because you were a white belt, and I was a blue belt. And that's where I got my first twister against Lee Cox, my very first twister. I was a blue belt, but I was watching you in the periphery. You were this white belt. You were doing like splaydles and shit. You were doing all this. I'm like, oh, dude, that crazy guy that was like actually warming up professionally, that guy's a wrestler. Holy shit, I could tell real quick. So I kind of just, you know, you spooked me right there. Like, you a real athlete. I'm like, how much does this motherfucker weigh? Is he in my division? I'm like, damn, he better not be in my division. So then the next year, you were already fucking purple belt, man. Yeah. Or maybe it was the third year. Maybe the next year still avoided you. I saw you coming up as a blue belt. And then the third year, that's when you were finally purple belt and you caught up to me. I was purple. I had started Brazilian jiu-jitsu ahead of you, but you caught me. You were white. Yeah. I was blue. I was purple. You were blue. And then you were purple and I was still purple. I was purple for like 5 years. And I remember getting to the turn, the drive was so, every year, Claudio Franca, the drive was so long, we get there. And I remember looking at the names and I already knew who you were. I'm like, where's Javi Vasquez? Fuck. Is he in my motherfucking division?
Oh my God.
I'm like, oh no. God damn. No, but the crazy thing is I was so goddamn nervous, but our very first fight, I did what I always do. I pull guard. And I grab the overhook, grab the collar deep, overhook, and I just take my time getting that call. And I swept you. That was I go from lockdown to super stomp, put the butterfly. And I remember I swept you. I'm like, oh shit. It was probably the best sweep of my motherfucking life. You went like right, your balance was so good that I took you straight over my head, landed on top. I got 2 points. And then like 10 seconds later, you swept me. You did the same thing. Whoa, boom, boom. You swept my ass. And we go back and it's 2-2. And the ref gave it to you because you were on top most of the match. And then the second match, same day, I fought you again, same day. I don't know how it, like, it was like double elimination or something.
I don't know. I think it was like a, yeah. We did it twice in the same day.
Yeah, and then that second time, I go, you know what? I'm going to open up with this motherfucker. I'm going to go after him. I felt a little more confident because I was scared to death of you, and I was like, damn, I lost 2-2. Man, maybe I shouldn't be so scared. So I went out there, and I was like, fuck it. I'm just going to fucking go off. And then you knee-barred me, and you fucked my leg up. You knee-barred me. I'll never forget that. And then the third, then we became friends. And then I remember I went to your school and we rolled and I'm like, damn, yeah. Like you were on my mind, dog. You were my rival, but we were like friends, but kind of like maybe fake friends a little bit. You know what I mean? Like I wanted to beat you. You wanted to beat me. And then the next time we went, it was at Joe Marrero's tournament in Irvine at that 24-hour fitness. Remember that shit? That was 1998.
24.
And right away, you passed my guard. You like knee slice past my guard. You got the 3 points. And then you were like too much judo side. And I went out the back and put my leg hook in and I brought you back into the truck. And then I had you in the truck for most of the match, but you were holding your belt. I couldn't break open and get baseball bat because you were holding your belt. And I didn't have an answer for that. I'm like, fuck. But you knew exactly what was going on because you wrestled and you already knew me. You're like, hey, the motherfucker's going for the twister. I'm not going to let go of my belt. So we stayed there. And instead of getting the leg hooks in and getting 4 points, it would have been 4-3. Mm-hmm. I was just stuck on the twister. I wouldn't put that leg hook in because I had you in the truck, but I had 0 points. And then at the very end, I tried to put the hooks in for the points, and then you escaped, and then you ended up on top, and then the match was over, and you won 3-0. So that one I feel like I won, dog. But I know technically you won. But then the final one, this is when your leg was already fucked up. Your leg was fucked up, and you told me, you go, I got a surprise for you. And I go, what? You go, dude, if I told you, I wouldn't be surprised, dog. Just wait. I'm like, oh shit, he's got it. He goes, I got something for you. Because you knew my game is always the same. I'm going to sit on my butt and I'm going to be leaning to my right. You already knew that. So you were just like, as soon as he does that, dude, you flipped over me. You did like a cartwheel and you flipped. As soon as I sat down, that was your surprise. And like, you took my back, like right away, like you didn't get the points for the back, but you got the points for like the pass or something. So you were like on my back. And then I recovered and I got the lockdown and you were already ahead on points. And then when I extended the lockdown, your leg was already fucked up and you went up. And then I remember your coach said, Javi, it's not worth it, dude. It's not worth it. Cause nobody taps the lockdowns. But if your leg is fucked up, it could, people could tap. You already have an injury and you get a good lockdown, that could fuck up your leg.
Yeah, so
that,
dangerous. But, it's dangerous.
But you didn't tap. You fucking, you held on and you just held me and the time ran out and you beat me again. So technically you're 4-0. You were my biggest rival. And then you did the ADCC trials and you tapped out Jeff Glover. That match is on YouTube. That's a great match, man. Because at that point, Jeff Glover was like fucking, he was like the Cole Abate, this young kid coming up, just fucking grown ass man up. And you guys had a badass match. And I remember wondering, I'm like, damn, is Javi going to be able to fuck with Jeff Glover? And you beat him. Wasn't easy, but you triangled him. And I remember what you said to me. You said, like, I go, so how did it go? And he goes, it was fun. It was fun. It was
super fun.
And he was fun. Like the way you say it, like a gangster, like, yeah, it was fun. You know what I mean?
Dude,
like,
Jeff is one of the funnest roles that you'll ever, he's so fun to roll with. I love rolling with that guy. He's a lot of fun to roll with because we kind of have a similar style in some ways. We have a very similar style, but I try to blend in a little bit of the wrestling in there, but we move. It's, you know, jiu-jitsu is movement, you know, and when you have a good rhythm, some people are very difficult to roll with. They're not fun rolls. And then there's some people that are just amazing. They're able to so softly manipulate you. That's kind of the level where I'm at. I'm able to manipulate now like your mind. It's pretty incredible.
And you were the top dog in my division. You were number one on the West Coast. You're a Brazilian jiu-jitsu legend, especially on the West Coast. That whole scene, when you understand the timeline of that whole scene on the mat and all that shit, you know, back in the day, it was like Grappler's Quest and all that shit. But so you were fucking me up as a purple belt. But after your leg got fucked up, dude, you were sidelined like maybe 3 or 4 years, man. Your leg was so fucked that your knee looks, and it looks crazy. It still looks crazy.
You want to see it? You want me to show you?
Let me see it. Can you show it? Do you have a mini skirt on?
No. So this is my good one, right? So this is my good one. This is kind of like what a normal kind of knee looks like, right? Just kind of like that, mm-hmm. right? So this is what we got.
Say something in the mic to get the camera back.
Hello.
There you go.
Look at that. So this is the good one. That's kind of like normal. No, I never really had any injuries. And then this is the.
Dude, your bad knee looks like the elephant man's head.
Yeah. Scar tissue.
Holy shit. So what ended up happening is with you out of the picture, I became like, you know, I became the motherfucker. I became the motherfucking man without you around. So then I did the trials in 2002 for Abu Dhabi. I won the trials. And then in 2003, I go to Abu Dhabi and you were still fucked up. You didn't do the trials. If you would have did the trials, you probably would have fucked me up. But I did the trials. I won. I go to Abu Dhabi. I beat Gustavo Dantas in the first round, get Hoyler in the second round, tap his ass out too. And then Leo Vieira in the next match crushed my soul. And then, I came back to the United States with my tail between my legs. And I just thought, damn, that Hoyler match, ain't nobody going to pay attention to that one because Leo Vieira fucked me up right afterwards.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It's the timing.
Yeah, it didn't matter. People were like talking about the Hoyler match. I go, hater. Well, what about the Leo Vieira match? What about the Leo? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But at least I tapped Hoyler. At least I got that. You know what I mean? Yeah, when I came back home, and I told my mom, she didn't know nothing about jiu-jitsu, but she knew I went to Brazil and to compete. And she goes, how did you do, baby? I said, I didn't win, but I tapped out Hoyler Gracie. And she goes, oh, it's okay, baby. Next time. Like, okay. I never explained to her the significance. But
yeah, that was a big deal.
So you were out the mix. I didn't have to worry about you. And then, you know, I open up 10th Planet, and then slowly you get back in the mix and you do the ADCC trials for 2005. And then you win in the finals against Jeff Glover. And then I was going to do 2005 too, but I popped my rib, had a back out, and then you got hurt too, and you couldn't do 2005. So we would have probably met maybe at the 2005 Abu Dhabi tournament, but I was hurt. You were hurt. Do you remember what you hurt?
I tore my groin. I shot like a high crotch and my groin just popped. So let me tell you something, Eddie Bravo.
What?
Nobody would have stopped me. I remember training with Rodrigo before that, no gi. And he was like, holy crap. He goes, nobody beats you in your weight class. I was like, damn. Rodrigo said it like.
And then you ended up going into MMA and you became a King of the Cage champion.
Yep. I was King of the Cage champion too. Yeah. That was.
Yeah. And then you ended up fighting in Strikeforce and the UFC, right? Strikeforce too?
I didn't fight in Strikeforce. I fought for Elite XC.
When Frank fought Caesar. Yes. Yeah, you were a bad motherfucker, man. You fought Chad Mendes in the UFC, and dude, you were using mad rubber guard, meat hook. You were meat hooking Chad Mendes like almost the whole match. He couldn't really hurt you. He never really landed anything on you, right?
He landed a good right hand standing up. He caught me right on the nose. But
on the ground, though, right? Nothing?
On the ground, like, yeah. Man, on the ground with strikes, I'm seriously considering. I mean, at some point I told you, I'm like, let me know when you're going to do that combat jiu-jitsu thing. I just don't think there's anybody better on the ground with strikes.
How much do you weigh right now?
I don't know, maybe 155 or between 155 and 60. I don't get above 160.
Well, then
I just don't know. I don't know if I do the whole tournament.
That's what we do, dog. We do whole tournaments, dog. That's gangster. It's gangster.
I gotta do something.
And 135 again. Hey, listen, 135 is the next show. It's like 3 months away. 3 months away. 135. You're doing it in Playa del Carmen. Is that too much?
Yeah. I would do 45.
Okay, so you're in the next time. We're gonna do 45 within like a year. You're in. You know you're in. I would love combat jiu-jitsu. It was made for you, dog.
You're all about
striking with grappling. That's your whole system.
Eddie. When I watch it, and I don't want to come across like too arrogant, right? But they're not on my level. I watch it. I'll tell you who's good is there's a Brazilian guy that's pretty good. Strong guy. He won it. Talk to me. Who is he? He's really good.
A Brazilian guy?
Yes.
Who won combat jiu-jitsu?
Mm-hmm.
One of my shows? A Brazilian?
Yeah. It was...
Not Roberto Jimenez.
No.
Because that guy's Ecuadorian or some shit.
There's one dude on there that I'm like, dude, this guy's problematic, but...
Brazilian. I don't think a Brazilian has ever won combat jiu-jitsu.
What is the guy's name? Anyways, that guy. That guy's tough. Like a Brazilian.
You know what? We've never had a Brazilian win. Unless, dude, I could be retarded. Are you talking about combat jiu-jitsu? A Brazilian who won the whole thing?
Yeah.
You mean Wagner Rocha?
Rocha's good.
Oh yeah, Hocha's he's good. Really good. He fought MMA for many years. Yeah.
Yes. I think he's a little bit bigger than me. I think he, like I said, I would probably do it at 45. I think he did it at 55. But he would be an interesting match. He'd be an interesting match.
He did 55. Yeah, I forget. To me, I don't consider Wagner Rocha. He's not Brazilian to me. He's just some American.
Isn't he Brazilian?
No, he's Brazilian. He is, but he speaks perfect English. And I forget he's Brazilian. To me, he's just like Cuban.
I think he's good.
Or Mexican. You know what I mean?
I think he's good. Again, Eddie, I've rolled MMA with everybody. I've rolled MMA with everybody. Between me and you. Like, seriously, I've rolled with UFC champions. I've rolled with black belts. I've rolled with the best of the best of the best. Nobody hits me on the ground.
I believe you, man. I call it the double C cup series. It's like, where a guy has his side control and both your arms are controlling his far arm. The one that's gonna punch you.
Sam Tripoli and I are coming to your town. Catch us on the road doing tinfoil hat comedy. Follow me on Instagram at tinfoil hat comedy night. Go to samtripoli.com for more information and to buy your tickets. See you on the road.
It's so good and all the options off it. We focus just on three basic options from it. Either we're going to come to the inside, we're going to come out to the outside. Like Marcelo Garcia always does the elbow escape from the outside. So I got that from Marcelo, but the inside one I got from you. And there's an inverted one where you hold him up and John Thor Blank, he pulled it off on the hillbilly hammer.
Sideman escape, right? That's what you're talking about?
Yes. You're attacking the far arm at the bicep, right? Palm up, palm down. I got that from you. Palm up, palm down. Ready to go either way.
I don't think you understand where we're at right now. The Sideman Escape series, which I used to call the Sideman Escape series, I've now kind of the four configurations.
The four configurations. I like there this. Four- I like. I, but go ahead. Call it whatever you want, but go ahead.
It's on another level. When you break things down by configuration and then attack each configuration with its best possible options, and you understand the configurations flow between one and the other, you gain a level of arm control which is unmatched. So you have to first understand what the secrets to fighting are. There are secrets to fighting. There are control points within fighting. You can control the distance, you control the fight, you control the rhythm, you control the fight, you control the hands, you control the fight. There are certain principles within fighting that you've got to get out of the mindset of moves. Oh, one up, one down. No, you have to think of it on a deeper level now. I'm thinking on it, about it on a strategical level, on a philosophical level, on a very art of war level. Let's attack it in the best possible way. What are the best possible outcomes? There are binary choices that we make. Things are either good or bad. Your hand being here is either good or bad. There's certain things that are either good or bad. Configurationally, if you broke it down picture by picture, configuration by configuration, each configuration has a specific strategy, which you, with when you attack it in that strategy, you win more than you lose, a lot more. So when you start to understand the concepts on a deeper level, you really, dude, it unlocks, it's like a superpower. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
Your system is called strike-based jiu-jitsu, correct?
Yeah, that's strike-based is one portion of it. That is the final layer. That is the top coat underneath the systems. I call the system the master plan. Remember, million years ago, I think you call your, what do you call yours? What do you call your system?
The best.
I'll be rivaling that, but yes. What is it? It's called the. What is your system?
10th Planet Jiu-Jitsu, dog.
Is that the whole system? There's you do the drills, it's all systemized. It's amazing. What you created is amazing.
I have 205 episodes of tutorials online. 200 over like probably 250 hours of instruction, pure instruction. All online, $6 a month.
Yeah, yes. To
all. I have everything, I keep going. I'm not stopped. I mean, I've never stopped.
I'm building. I have 12 terabytes of organized data at the current moment. Everything is already labeled. All the videos are labeled. I just got to get them cut up. Every system is already comprised, and then so we have all of the systems already comprised. Then on top of that, I've built a series of lectures which coordinate with the systems. I'm breaking it down. I'm going step by step. I'm breaking everything down. And then on top of that, we have a mindset. JVOS is a mindset. There's a seminar that I'm going to be teaching here on June 24th. I want to invite you to this seminar. I'm going to talk about the 5 key principles of JVOS. I think you're going to be blown away.
All I'm interested in is your strike-based jiu-jitsu. I want it's that main.
That is that when you understand the systems, when I add strikes, it's the final layer to the system. Understand that all of the paint work, all the body work that we've done is to lay out so that when we add the strikes, it's seamless.
So what's the difference? What's the difference between strike-based jiu-jitsu and your average jiu-jitsu out there?
My God!
No. When it comes to regards to MMA, like why strike-based jiu-jitsu? What's the difference between that and all other jiu-jitsu? Except mine,
because I approach the complexity of jiu-jitsu on a different level. What I looked at, there's phases of my life, there's phases of my mindset. But what I've realized is I always had a particular mindset when I was learning jiu-jitsu. I would plug holes. So every position is a hole. Every position is what I call a positional perspective. Each perspective has a way that works more often than not. You say, okay, I have this move. It works like every time, every single time. This move works. And you have other moves that work. Oh, they work sometimes, or if the guy's doing this, it works. And then there's some moves where like, I just try it once in a while, right? I think that people have that, but what I've done is I've created what I call the central path. The central path in each configuration, in each position is the best. It's the best way. It's the way that works way more than it fails. So I start with that. Every position has a best move. And why is it the best move? I can get into the specifics of why it works that way, But that doesn't matter. Understand that this particular way works more. You win far more than you lose. So I start with that. Now, when you start with that one, what it does, people start to defend it. And I call it generating behavior. So when an opponent, when I'm attacking or defending in a particular way, the opponent reacts. Now, how are they going to react? They might react one, two, three different ways, but they're going to react. You're not going to see much more than these ways, which I already know what they are, but I know that when I attack a particular way, these are the three ways that you're going to counter. So each one of those three ways already has a predetermined solution. So I'm already ahead two moves. The second you get to here, I already know what I'm going to do next. So I'm already beating you. I'm creating what I call a defensive perimeter. I'm generating a timeline of events through motion and time based on the decisions that I've made. So I'm starting from the central path. Now, from the central path, you react A, B, and C. These are secondary and supplemental options. When a guy reacts more often than not in a particular way, obviously that's secondary. So now you can start putting those two things into combination, because now you are generating the person's behavior. You're controlling the timeline of events. So now the person has to become reactive. I am making my timeline to where I'm generating. I'm making it happen. I'm in the future. Meanwhile, you're reacting to the moment by moment. It's all perspective. The timing is perspective. I am generating behavior. I am creating a timeline of events based off of the best possible way for me to do it. Dude, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
Why strike based though? What you're calling it strike based? And I asked you what?
I'm not calling it strike based. My jiu-jitsu, because of this particular way of fighting, and because you defend in a particular way, it opens up your face every time. Every time. Because the threat of what I'm doing is so real. If you don't defend it the way I'm doing it, I'm going to take what I want. I'll just take it directly. You have to defend the way I'm making you defend. Because if you defend any other way, you're going to lose. So you have to defend the way you, and then how you defend basically comes down. The bottom line is this: he who controls the hands controls the fight. No matter how you break it down, it comes down to the hands. It comes down to the hands. Either you can control my hands or you cannot control my hands. And I have spent far more time controlling people's hands than they have countering the way I'm controlling people's hands. And if I control your hands, you cannot punch me.
So you're saying most jiu-jitsu styles are not considering strikes. And your style
not
automatically has that built in.
It's a built-in system. It's built in. It's baked into the cake.
Yeah, it's like rubber guard, for instance. Like rubber guard, you play rubber guard just in regular jiu-jitsu class. Like Ben Eddy. Ben Eddy is one of my best rubber guard players, and he never thought of ever doing MMA. He's not an MMA mindset at all. Mm-hmm. But he's so goddamn good at rubber guard that he wanted to do combat jiu-jitsu. And most mm-hmm. people that do combat jiu-jitsu have MMA experience or have MMA aspirations or used to be an MMA fighter, and they're coming down. Either they're getting into MMA or they're like, okay, MMA is enough. I can't handle all that fucking Muay Thai no more, but I'll do combat jiu-jitsu. You're either coming in or coming out, or you're just right there and just say, you know what? Combat jiu-jitsu is the best anyways. It's so
I think jiu-jitsu should be taught for combat jiu-jitsu. You and I have had a very similar mindset when we were coming up, right? The whole point of rubber guard is to prevent posture. That's your whole concept. If I can prevent posture, then he can't hit me, right? If I can get his hands on the ground, he can't hit me. This is the underlying root of how the philosophy behind the idea, right?
Yeah.
Behind the way you do it. So we both had, that's why,
go ahead. Hold on. My point is, with Ben Eddy when he decided to do combat jiu-jitsu, because he was such an advanced rubber guard player. His first combat jiu-jitsu match was against Wilson Hayes, when Wilson Hayes just, not only is Wilson Hayes a veteran black belt, legit Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt, but he had just fought for the championship, for the belt in the UFC. And he's coming off that. And he just fought Demetrius Johnson. And then he does combat jiu-jitsu. He does a match against Ben Eddy. Ben Eddy's never done MMA, but he put him in rubber guard, and you know, he did what he always does, whether there's strikes involved or not. It's the same thing. And he did the exact same. Awesome. He didn't have to adjust his game at all. And that's the whole point. There's no adjustment. So that's
the point. It's baked into the cake.
Exactly.
It's functionality. It's real life functionality is baked into the cake. That is what they're missing. What are we doing this for? What am I doing this for? I'm not doing this to win medals. I've got tons of medals. I don't care about the medals. What I care about is the fact I could have an intelligent conversation with you after having 25 pro MMA fights and not having so much brain damage that I'm stuttering and drooling, right? That's what was important to me, not taking damage. The underlying root of my system and my style was, what's my catchphrase here? Don't get hit. Don't get hit. That's everything. If you don't take damage, you are surviving, and survival is a result of you not taking damage. It's baked into the cake. The longer I can survive, eventually I'm going to get you. That's an Elio Gracie philosophy.
Yeah, that's exactly what you did against against Chad Mendes in the UFC. He was on top of you whenever you guys were on the ground. He was generally on top. That guy's a fucking beast. But he never really hurt you because you were kept throwing up rubber guard. You kept meat hooking him, and you kept him, his posture for throwing strikes was never intact. You were always throwing it off. He was always off balance. He always had a leg around his fucking neck. And that's the whole point of 10th Planet Jiu-Jitsu. And that's the point of your jiu-jitsu too, is if you're doing jiu-jitsu and you know, just for fun and just for sport, and you don't care about the self-defense aspect or MMA aspect, that's fine. There are plenty of guys like that. I'm not like that though. I want my jiu-jitsu to be ready, whether it's on the streets. And I was always preparing my jiu-jitsu just in case I ever had to do MMA. I never wanted to do MMA. I wasn't like you. I wasn't like, fuck, I want to get in the cage and fuck people. I would only do MMA if my back was against the wall and it was between waking up at 5:30 in the morning and swinging a hammer or training MMA. I'd train, you know, I would like, I might have to do some MMA. Luckily, I had a big win in the jiu-jitsu world, and that kicked off my teaching career, and thank God I didn't have to do MMA. I'm Eddie Bravo, founder of 10th Planet Jiu-Jitsu with over 150 schools and over 30,000 soldiers worldwide. Music has always been my deepest passion. Without that musical journey that I took, I probably wouldn't be here right now. I can't tell my music story without having my musical partner my whole life and best friend, Mr. James Watson.
I said, I want to be in a band no matter what. Oh, well, there it is. I got to move to Los Angeles. I said, I got to go to that place. If this California is supporting metal.
Me and James just started making music. Mastering the Metal, the story of James Watson and Eddie Bravo. Print and audiobook available now. But I trained just in case. I was developing my jiu-jitsu just in case. I didn't want to have to, because I was going to be so far behind with striking and wrestling. I didn't want to have to revamp my jiu-jitsu because that's going to take more time. I wanted my jiu-jitsu as MMA ready as possible so I could focus on striking and wrestling just in case I ever had to do MMA. Thank God I didn't. But the jiu-jitsu, I mean, it's been proven over and over again that that's the main reason I put together combat jiu-jitsu, to make sure that jiu-jitsu, sport jiu-jitsu, doesn't stray so far away from reality.
Yes.
The strikes, snap it back. That's the whole point. Because to me, it's a big problem when in jiu-jitsu, the most popular guard is sit-up guard, where you're on your butt and you're looking for 21. That's the most, everybody plays that, or they play like an open Z guard, you know, and they kind of invert and have that open Z and got their shield up. Those are the two most popular guards in MMA by far. The least popular guard those are the most popular guards in jiu-jitsu. The least popular guard in jiu-jitsu, the least, is full guard. You could win Abu Dhabi 25 times in a row and never play full guard. You don't need full guard to win Abu Dhabi. That's the last thing that's the last thing you need. A full guard every now and then. There are a couple of people who play full guard at a high level. Shondi Ribeiro, Crone Gracie. There's a couple guys. Most people don't want to have anything to do with no closed guard in Abu Dhabi. You don't need it. But now you look at MMA. The two worst guards in MMA, the two worst, sit-up guard and open Z guard, the two worst, and the most important guard, full guard. That's the most important fucking guard. So to me, that's the problem. So to me, that's a big problem.
It's a huge problem. Listen, you know what, man? I have been blessed. I'm blessed to be here. You know that. I'm blessed to be here.
We'll get to that.
And My goal in life in this second chance is legacy. It is legacy. It is so important to me, for my lineage, for my kids, and for myself, to leave my legacy. Because it was almost lost, not just once, but twice.
Let's talk about that. For most of you guys don't know that Javi is surviving cancer.
Not surviving, my friend. On my birthday just passed. Cancer survivor, 5 years so far.
Now let's take it back. Let's take it back. You're married. You have two kids, two daughters, beautiful daughters. You're married to Rose Gracie at this time. Tell us, how did you find out? What happened? How did this cancer, you had colon cancer, correct?
Yeah, stage 3C colon cancer.
Tell me about how you found out. Let's take it from there.
I was getting really weird kind of like abdominal pains, right? I came back from a couple of seminars and coming off the plane, just an excruciating pain, like, man. But I would get home and it would just kind of pass. It would just kind of go away. And one afternoon, man, it wasn't passing, and it was getting super intense. So we ended up going to an ER.
So it's your stomach, your gut, or your stomach?
My stomach. It was just crippling pain. It was my basically what it was constipation, right? So my muscles were trying to push whatever was going through, and it wasn't going through. And it was the pain was my body, you know, trying to move stuff.
So you would go a couple days without taking a shit?
I wasn't paying it. I was not in a frame of mind where I was paying attention to any internal problems.
You don't take shits on a regular basis? You know, people ask me, go, do you need an alarm clock? I do not need an alarm clock. My ass is my alarm clock. Every day, 7:30, 8 o'clock, my ass wakes me up. I got to take a shit. So if I went a couple days
without... Coffee?
After I take a shit. After. My ass is a regular, you know? So if I went a couple days without taking a shit, I'd be fucking worried. I'm like, dude, I haven't shit in 2 days. But okay, so go on.
Let me first say that I wasn't in my body. My mind, it was basically, I was not in my body, so I wasn't really paying attention. I was under a good amount of stress. So I was not really, my mind was spinning and doing other things. So I really wasn't paying attention to the signs that my body was giving me, but my body was giving me signs.
And at this point you had your school in Rancho Cucamonga?
Yes.
Okay. And at that point it was a Gracie school?
It was never a Gracie school, but give me 1 second here. Give me 1 second. Sorry about that. I forgot to turn on Do Not Disturb. It wasn't really a Gracie school. But I taught, you know, I taught combatives there for a while. It was, I guess, oh, technically it was a Gracie affiliate for about 2 years, actually. Okay. No, you're right.
Okay. And then when you found out, tell me about, you went to the hospital, your stomach was just killing you.
Yeah, my stomach was killing me, and they basically gave me an enema, I guess, and it kind of cleared everything out. I'm like, oh my God, I feel so much better. It was like, it was crazy. It felt so much better. I was like, okay, let's go home. And they're like, no. They're like, well, we're going to have to run a test. We're going to have you take a colonoscopy or whatever to see what caused it. I'm like, oh, that makes sense. So I think I stayed the night, got a colonoscopy in the morning, and they're like, well, we found a lump. We found what are they called? They're called
polyps.
Yeah, we found a polyp, and I'm like, oh, okay. And they're like, and it looks cancerous. And I'm like, oh, that doesn't make it, you know, I'm like, I doubt it. Right. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like 80-20? The lady was like super concerned. My surgeon was like super concerned. She goes, yeah, I would say that. I go, yeah, that's okay then. And he goes, no, 80 the other way. I'm like, really? I'm like, yeah. So a couple of days later, got the results, and it was cancer. So, you know, I want to tell the full story, because this is a, my experience with cancer and with the healthcare industry was, I think, a pretty unique experience, because, you know, so I met up with my oncologist, and he tells me, yeah, we're gonna have to have surgery to remove the lump. And I go, okay. So when I had surgery, the most painful surgery I've had over 20 surgeries in my life, by far the most painful surgery I've ever had was a resection surgery. Holy cow, dude.
They don't give you any anesthetic or anything?
Of course they do. It's on another level. It's on another level.
What, they stuck something in your butt, so I was, like, cut stuff out? Is that like they stick like some kind of cutting device in your butt?
No. They cut you down. They cut it. They make a small incision. They cut it out, and then they glue it back together. However they do it, they stitch it back together. So, bro,
Are you asleep during
this? Yes. You're fully out. But
when you wake up,
holy! I mean, but it was it took like months for things to heal. It took a long time. Like it took a. I was out of commission for like 6 months. Like I was like not doing anything for like 6 months. It's like a major, major deal. And so, you know, I think it was a couple months later, healed up, whatever, go see my oncologist again. And I'm like, okay, cool. We're good. Feeling good. You know, can I start training? And he's just kind of like, no. Now you got to do chemo. I'm all, chemo? Dude, My original reaction was, I'm not doing chemo. And it became like, I had already been doing research about cancer and Gerson and you know, what's been going on. So I kind of, you know, I already knew what I was going to do as far as how I was going to heal. So I knew I was going to have to change my nutrition some. But I didn't understand what Gerson therapy was, but I knew I was going to have to modify my nutrition and juice and all that.
Explain what Gerson therapy is.
Gerson therapy is a protocol that's prescribed by someone at the Gerson Institute, one of their practitioners, that encompasses four parts to rejuvenate your body. Essentially, you're rejuvenating your body. You're healing the body from the inside out, because healing comes from the inside. Healing does not come from the outside. It comes from within, your spirit, your soul, your willingness to fight to live. This was a fight to survive. So I was willing to fight as hard as I could, do my best every day to survive. It encompasses fresh pressed juices, supplements, nutrition, a certain foods that you're eating, and coffee enemas. So if you think of it as you're putting good food in, live food, food that's alive, and then you're pulling out the coffee enema, in with the good, out with the bad. So if you think of this as a cycle, if you give this cycle time, your body heals. Your body heals because you're detoxifying what is in you that is causing the cancer.
What is it about? What is it about coffee enemas that are so effective?
Okay, so a couple things. One, when it, imagine kind of rinsing it off, you're pulling out more every time, so your body is carrying less toxicity because you're kind of flushing up the colon. So that's one thing. The second thing is there's I believe
why coffee though.
There's something in the coffee. There's a palmitate, I believe it's called a palmitate or something in the coffee, which when in contact with the liver produces an enzyme, which helps like a vacuum cleaner free up free radicals within your bloodstream. So you do a coffee enema, you lay on your right side for 15 minutes and it takes 5 minutes for the blood to circulate through your body. So it goes through three cycles of circulation to pick up those free radicals, dump them into the colon, and then the coffee enema with the water pulls it out. So you're basically detoxifying, expediting the excretion process, so you're detoxifying faster, which makes you pull more toxins out every time. So that's one of, you can't do the therapy without the enemas. It's pulling all the toxins and chemicals and everything into your bloodstream, and it's going to make you sick. It's all that stuff that goes in the blood is dumped into the colon. It's filtered to the liver and then the waste is dumped into the colon. You're pulling out the waste at a faster rate. That's what you're doing.
Okay. So when they told you, when the doctor told you you'd have to do chemo, what's going on in your head?
I told him straight up, I'm not doing chemo. And he's like, you have to. So we were kind of going back and forth. And he tells me, I'll never forget it, you're committing suicide if you don't follow my instructions. I looked at him, I smiled. I said, we'll see.
I want that upper body clench. That's what I'm going after. With the underhook, looking for double underhooks. That's a juicy ass clench. Perfect double underhooks, you're on your side, boom. That's all perfect. That's huge. In my game, for me, I'm like, I got this motherfucker. First fight in Abu Dhabi 2003 against Gustavo Dantas. I got right in and got perfect double underhooks. I'm like, oh my God, I had him in a lockdown, perfect double underhook, really quick. He just gave it to me, Mike. And I was just sitting there going, oh my God, he just gave it to me. That was just off a front headlock, 100%. Push into him, you wanna smash him, and then jump on that leg. You wanna rush him, so they're off balance, you jump on that leg, you hook that leg, you're gonna take their back or put them in the truck, either one. Does that make sense?
4 months later, after doing the protocol for 4 months, I had to
explain that protocol, like your daily routine. It's insane.
It builds. I believe it starts off with 6 juices a day, then it goes to 9 juices a day, and then you go to 12.
Take us through like your day, like actually getting the produce, and what was your day like? That, I mean, that sounds like a lot of work.
First of all, and I'll talk about my maintenance protocol after, but yeah, the full protocol is insane. My sister, if it wasn't for my sister, I wouldn't be here. We did a documentary online, kind of cataloging a little bit of it. Fight to Win is the name of it. It's on YouTube. Without my sister's help, it wouldn't have been possible. There's not enough hours in a day.
What did she do? What did she do?
She did all the shopping. She did all the cooking. She did all the prep work for my juices. So I basically just had to sit there and not do anything. My job was to sit there, rest, let my body heal, and not do anything.
And how many juice? And how often did you drink the juices?
Every hour.
A glass every hour?
A cup of juice every hour for 12 hours straight. Every hour, you're up. Every 45 minutes, you're up pressing juice.
Fuck.
Every 45 minutes, an alarm would go off. I'd get up, go take juice, go take supplements.
Even during the night, you couldn't sleep through the night?
No. You run the protocol during the day, and then during the night, you're supposed to rest. Rest is a huge part of it. Letting your body rejuvenate itself through rest. That's where the healing comes up. That's where the real healing comes, is from rest and sleep. Recovery.
Wow. What were you doing like at like the height of this? At like in between the juices, you have to You have to prepare every 45 minutes. You have to drink a glass of juice.
How did you
keep your mind together?
And then there was 4 coffee enemas throughout the day. So we're doing 12 juices and then a coffee enema in the morning, coffee enema around 11, coffee enema about 3, and another coffee enema around 7.
And you're not eating, you're not taking anything else, any other food, just the juice, that's it, no other food?
No, I'm eating oatmeal in the morning, three course meal for lunch and dinner. So it was like a salad, Hippocrates soup that we have to take with every meal. Those are standards. Those are your baits. So every meal is based off of the salad and the soup, and then whatever third potential option that you get, right? Whatever.
Chicken breast. Chicken breast.
No. Chicken meat. Breast. No meat. No oil. No nuts. No. You're limited to potatoes, like carrots, like onions. You couldn't do certain spices. Couldn't do like salt. No salt.
No salt.
No salt. I don't eat food with salt at all. Salt's poison.
Whoa.
Salt is poison.
You don't eat salt?
No. There's salt in food that I eat, like very, very small, but most of my meals are not salt. And then there's salt within some of the vegetables that I take, but you can't taste it. But salt is poison. Fluoride is poison. Poison.
I know about fluoride. I know that's poison, but yes. I thought farmers put out a block of salt for all the cattle to lick it because they need it to live.
Are you a cow?
Some people think I am. My wife does.
I will say this. There is one blood type that can eat meat. So I can't say that meat is bad for everyone. No, there's one blood type that eats meat. So three of the 4 blood types, you shouldn't eat meat.
Which blood type needs meat?
I don't remember which one because I'm not part of it.
What blood type are you?
I don't even know that, but I know I can't eat meat.
So no meat, no salt.
No meat, no salt. It's very little processed food. Like I look at it as meals, right? My breakfast is oatmeal and fruit.
Every day.
Every day. It makes it easy. It makes it easy. You can put a variety of fruits. You can put cinnamon. You can mix it up. When you think of it like breakfast, if you have the same breakfast every day, wonderful. I have one big salad a day. So that's 2 meals a day. And then my third meal, it'll be my sister would cook some Gerson approved kind of meal for me to help me with that at the current time. Or I cook myself something. That's it.
What's your favorite thing to cook yourself?
I like oatmeal.
Even at night?
I don't eat oatmeal at night, but generally. Sometimes I will, but not so much at night. What do I like to cook for myself? I don't see cooking that way. My mindset on cooking is a little bit different. It's fuel solely. I mean, my food is good. Like my kids have my food and they're like, "Dad, you're really good." I'm like, fuel, simply fuel. That's why I have my fruits and oats in the morning. I have my salad that has my greenery in the afternoon. And then my sister will cook me maybe, you know, like penne pasta, you know, penne pasta, but pea penne pasta, like, you know, stuff like that. Like, I'll have that with like a cashew sauce, but no salt, you know, just, you know, maybe add, you could add some curry to it. Give it like, you know, stuff like that. Like my cooking is, it's fuel. That's it.
Okay. So let's back up. Now you decide to not do chemo and then you get on the Gerson therapy. You're juicing every hour. You have 4 enemas, coffee enemas a day. How long did you have to do that before you were considered a survivor? What was the process? Because initially in the beginning, you would test positive for cancer, however they tested. And then how long did it take for them to say, dude, there's no more cancer in your
system? 4 months.
4 months.
4 months. I went back and I met that same oncologist 4 months later.
Did you get him in a fucking meat hook?
No, I gave him the paperwork and I was like this, because I already knew. My Gerson practitioner was running my labs every month, so I knew. But this guy was like every 3 months or every 4 months. So then he runs it. He goes, how did you do this? He said, I've never seen this before in my life. And I looked at him. And I said, remember when you told me I'm committing suicide? What did I tell you? Do you remember what I told you? I said, we'll see. You don't know what you don't know, my friend.
Now,
you don't know what you don't know.
Now, this particular protocol, is it specifically for the kind of cancer you had, colon cancer, or does it work for all cancers?
The protocol might be varied in supplementation and a couple things here and there, but there's like a base protocol. That base protocol and supplementation regimen cures like everything.
You've heard, obviously you're on top of testimonials and stuff. So you've probably heard of a bunch of people that had similar results as you. Are you like on, or you don't even pay attention to that? You just focus on your own shit.
I'm focusing on me. I've been interviewed by some of the Gerson people, and you know, some people when they interview me, they see that I ride bikes. Like, man, I can't believe you're doing something. I'm like, I am back to normal. The way I look at it is, my mindset is I am back to normal, and so long as I keep up my end of the bargain and I'm able to really, what my weakness was, control my emotions. I'm pretty emotional, I guess, but things like once I've kind of wrapped my head around understanding how to control emotion and how to be a little bit more stoic, I think I'll be fine. I'm motivated.
Damn, man, that's so no Jack in the Box late night or nothing like that for you. Not even like
you
tell.
Well, when you tell me, you know, it's funny because everyone has the same reaction about parts of the protocol. No salt. Salt is good. Salt tastes good. Everyone likes salt. But when you stop eating salt, you stop craving salt. And when you start tasting salt in food, it seems like, man, this food is really salty. So people keep adding more and more. You're altering the chemistry in your body. It completely shifts the way you feel and the way your body functions as a machine. The number one thing that I notice most about being on this protocol, besides having good energy, high energy, it's my ability to think clearly, my connection to God, the ability to instantly connect and think and process information has been the biggest benefit of this diet. It's unbelievable.
Are you allowed to smoke weed? That's a no.
I think, well, it can be taken in a variety of different ways. Smoking weed is the smoke. So it can be maybe taken different ways.
You mean like edibles?
Could be edibles, could be other ways.
Edibles, smoking.
Yeah, vaping. Vaping's not smoking.
Okay.
Because there's a fire when you're smoking, right?
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so.
Okay, so you vape. How often do you vape? How often do you vape?
When I need to.
And would you say when you're balls deep in breaking down your system and writing everything down, are you generally vaped? That's a yes.
I do believe that the amount of artwork I've created,
you're an artist.
Artwork,
you do
there's
art.
There's a lot of.
I want to see. Art, I want to see.
You want to see some of my art?
Are you a painter? I didn't know.
It's all about the system.
Oh, jujitsu art. Okay. I thought maybe you were like.
Do you want me to send you a piece of art?
Okay.
What I consider art.
Okay. Let me see.
Give me a second. So I started, when COVID hit, I started filming the system. I already kind of knew the systems and all that. Like there's a bunch of stuff that was already kind of done. So I started filming. And as I was filming, this information started coming to me, like without me really, you know, prayers for, you know, guidance and stuff, of course. But I started getting this information, these terms would start coming to me. So I started to write down all the terms, and each term had a definition. I knew the definition, but God was kind of releasing one term at a time or a couple terms at a time. A term would come when I was on a ride, so I'd stop, write it down. And I started to gather these terms together. Then I started realizing some of these terms go together. They have a relationship. So I started grouping the terms together, and that was the foundation of what is now known as JVOS. It's an operating system. It's a mindset. It's a way of thinking. And I started to mix and match the terms and concepts in different positions, kind of applying the concept I had over here, and I went, oh my God, it works. So it started working. So then I started to kind of realize the consistencies within these strategies. And it let me understand that I do these moves because they work, yes, but the mindset behind the moves gives the moves a whole new clarity. So what this represents is the entire system, where JVOS is the center of the system. From JVOS, from the mindset, we positionally break down jiu-jitsu, standing, chest to back, chest to chest, and supplemental. That's it. It's a configurationally based program. So chest to back encompasses two positions, the turtle and the back mount. Now, the turtle has two chapters, top and bottom. The back mount has two chapters, offense and defense. So when you really look at it, the back mount is not the goal. The goal is chest to back. And chest to back, now, when you look at it from chest to back rather than from the back, because what happens every time people do jiu-jitsu? They go to turtle, and then they rush out of turtle, and then they get the hooks in because you get points. And then you're, oh, the back is better than the turtle. Not necessarily. Not the, depends on your perspective of what you're attacking from the turtle. So when I started to break these things down positionally, it started to change everything. Chest to chest, guard, side mount, and mount. That's chest to chest. Now, what's the difference? The configurations of the legs or the positioning, the positional perspective. So each chapter is a positional perspective with its own central path strategy. Each central path is categorized into primary, secondary, and supplemental.
For all your 10th Planet Jiu-Jitsu merchandise, please visit 10thplanetjj.com/shop. We also got a Look Into It t-shirt that just dropped. Thank you very much for your support.
What that does is it generates a consistent timeline within each positional configuration or positional perspective. That's what that is. Each chapter is independently broken down. Each chapter is independently color-coded. So when you're reading the maps, you know, you can visualize in your mind. I have maps that visualize within your mind. You can see the position and you can watch the things happen in your mind, generating the timeline. When I couldn't train for 6 months, all I did was meditate and think about jiu-jitsu. When I came back, the things I was thinking about, I was able to instantly apply them on the mat. It was like I was applying them on the mat in my mind for 6 months. So when I came, it felt normal. It felt natural. So you can learn jiu-jitsu by doing moves, but you can also learn jiu-jitsu by thinking about jiu-jitsu. And if I can show you a picture which has a color-coordinated scheme, which has videos that go along teaching each individual's timeline, it allows you to retain the information faster, which is one of the goals of the master plan. Get good fast. Perfect punch defense. Universal comfort. These are the goals. So I started this plan with goals. I had goals in mind. And then each position, I hit my goal. And then within each position, you systemize the consistent goal retention.
Now explain universal comfort. I like that one.
Universal comfort means no matter where the fight takes place, I'm happy.
Exactly. You know, man, I explain that to my student. That's one where you have to really sit down your wrestlers, dudes who've wrestled their whole life. And you know, you have to explain to them, you know, I know that the whole sport you're involved in or were involved in is based on top position. And mm-hmm. you know, there's no guard pulling in wrestling. You know, you don't guard pull in wrestling. So it's hard to change that mindset. And I'm working with Ian Butler right now, and he wrestled his whole life. And he's like, you know, he comes into my jiu-jitsu class and he has that wrestling mindset. And I had to sit him down and I've given this talk many times. I go, listen, wrestling is beautiful. I used to wrestle. I love it. All right. But this is jiu-jitsu class. Okay. When you fight, yeah, wrestle your ass off. Try to get on top. This class is for the guys that at the top, the beasts at the top, they take you down and put you on your back. That's what mm-hmm. this class is for. This class is for when you run into your worst case nightmare. Worst case is a guy that can take you down. You can't take him down. He's just way better wrestling at you. Yeah, you may be the best wrestler in your room, and you're like, oh, I'm always on top. I play top position. I'm always on top. You're the best wrestler in the room, dog. Every room got a beast like you, multiple beasts. And the higher you go in the top 10, the more likely you're going to be on your back. The higher you go, the more you're going to be on your back. So this class, it's not your wrestling class. This class, we start the game on your back. Pull guard and
it's mindset.
Yeah. And, mm-hmm. and when you look at ADCC, anybody training for ADCC, or anybody that comes to me and they're telling me they're going to train for ADCC, everybody agrees. Everybody's in agreement. Work your wrestling shit, because ADCC is basically a wrestling tournament that also has opportunities for submission as well. But it's like it's ADCC. Wrestling is super important. Got to wrestle. Oh, you're doing ADCC? When are you wrestling? How often are you wrestling, dog? You better start wrestling. You know. So everybody agrees with that. But isn't it weird that all the legends of Abu Dhabi didn't wrestle? They all pulled guard. Jean-Jacques Machado, first ADCC fucking legend, assassin, went out in his first year and finished everybody. Back when in Abu Dhabi, nobody was finishing anybody. Submissions were fucking rare. Watch those first two Abu Dhabis. Find me a submission. It'll take you 3 hours. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But Jean-Jacques comes out of nowhere, pulls guard on everybody, and taps them out. And then who was the next god? The next Marcelo Garcia. He didn't wrestle. He pulled guard. He pulled guard on everybody. He's the master butt scooter. And then now today, who's the ADCC god? Gordon Ryan. He's the only, everybody wrestling in ADCC. Everybody wrestling. And I agree with them. You better wrestle. I'm with you. But isn't it weird that the legends don't wrestle? The guys that are so good, they just sit on their butt. Like Gordon Ryan, Craig Jones. What is Craig Jones? Craig Jones just sits on his butt and goes, you know what? Because in order to be the fucking best, you have to be comfortable universally, right? There you go.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because when I started jiu-jitsu, my mindset was very different than the average wrestler. I think now coming, because what you just said is very common. My goal in jiu-jitsu, the first thing I learned was guard. The first thing I wanted to learn was guard.
Not all wrestlers I got to talk to like that. Some wrestlers come in, dude, I didn't have to say shit. Like Connor Hune wrestled his whole life. His dad was his wrestling coach. This dude came to me and he just started pulling guard. He loved it. He was playing rubber guard and strike force. People forgot about all that rubber guard. He'd fucking mission control and elbow the fuck out of motherfuckers. Black belts and shit. Connor Hune was a beast. He's a wrestler, lifelong wrestler, but always pulling guard and was flexible. Same thing with John Blank, Thor from 10th Planet Allentown. That guy wrestled. He came up as a wrestler, but day one, he's pulling guard. Not those. I always said this, Javi, and you're a big part of this You're a big part of this. I always said the best American jiu-jitsu players are wrestlers that fell in love with jiu-jitsu, as opposed to wrestlers coming into jiu-jitsu rooms and trying to out-wrestle these jiu-jitsu guys. Like, you're not going to get that good, dude. The only, you're in jiu-jitsu, you need to be starting from step one. Step one, you're on your back. Every day, you're starting on your back. Unfortunately, in jiu-jitsu, half the people got to start on top. So I can't give this advice to everybody because someone's got to be on top. But when you're in a jiu-jitsu room and it's packed and there's no wrestling because you just don't have room to wrestle and everyone just starts on the ground and on their knees. If you're starting on your knees because you're doing jiu-jitsu, you're not working on wrestling, that's fucking Sunday and Tuesday. Okay, we're doing jiu-jitsu right here. Wrestling is, we're not doing wrestling. You should start the best thing you could do is always pull guard, always working your way to the top. Yes, we want to get to the top. Yes, we want to pass the guard. But if you're in a jiu-jitsu room and someone sat on their butt and you're on top, you didn't earn that top position. You didn't earn shit. Like in a top 10 match, maybe the guy doesn't pull guard. He probably ain't going to pull guard. He's probably going to try to take you down. So you're like wasting an opportunity. If you choose to be that top guy in the jiu-jitsu room, you're wasting the opportunity to start from the bottom and you work your way to the top. Earn your way to the top. Every day, you earn your way to the top. The problem is, a lot of people, is a problem and the beauty of jiu-jitsu at the same time. The beauty of jiu-jitsu is you get to fucking practice killing motherfuckers every night, and it's Abu Dhabi every night. It's the same thing. Your fit is the same thing. It isn't different. It's the same thing, like Abu Dhabi, fucking Nogi Worlds, EBI. It's the same thing every night, multiple matches. So you're having like super fights, like your own little personal super fights every night. And it's a beautiful thing. And you could take them seriously. Like, oh, I got to get that win. I got to get that top. I got to beat this motherfucker. You know, you could take it like, oh, it's like it's going on your record or whatever. Or you could come into class and look at your training partners as just training tools. You're working on getting better, not... You're not trying to tap this guy out three or four times, but that's the fun part when you get to do that. That's why people get addicted. But you also have to have the ability to go into class and work on your game, work and using your training partners for that guy. You're trying to get to the top 10. You should be training for that guy. And that's number three right now. The guy that's number one, the guy that's number two. How are you going to beat that guy? You're going to get on top of that guy? Yeah. Maybe you're wrestling everybody in here. But what about when that guy puts you on your fucking back? You got to train for your worst case scenario every day, and then you're fine. That's what all the best guys do. All the best guys, they all pull guard. All the best guys pull guard. You know what? Because that's how they start their jiu-jitsu. And every day, if that's how you start, every day you're working on solving the problem of getting on top through sweeps and passing. That's super important. You know, all my guys that are everyone's got to develop a different way. I guess everyone can develop the same because it's good for the whole. Everyone's different. You got this guy's all in the leg locks. That guy's all in the leg locks. That guy don't like leg locks. That
There's
guy
a value.
And then mix it up. You gotta have those dudes that are all like, I love leg locks. That's all I do. Fuck a sweep. Fuck a pass. I'm just gonna jump on your legs. You need a bunch of those dudes when you're looking at the big picture. You're not looking at like every match is going to be on your record. We're looking at developing the whole squad. And to develop a whole squad, the best way, in my opinion, is everyone can't have the same style. You need a bunch of different styles, and you need everyone exposed to different styles. And as many styles you're exposed to, the more prepared you're going to be in competition. So
it's an interesting.
But that's what
statement.
You did. You pulled guard. You were one of those wrestlers. They came in, and that's what you did. Your guard's extraordinary. You have one of the best guards in the fucking, in all of MMA history, dog. When you look at MMA history, there ain't that many good guard players. Oh, no. There's not that many. But if you paid attention, shit, you had a fucking fantastic guard. You had one of the best guards in the game. So, and you're a wrestler. That's so rare. You know what I mean?
Crazy, right?
That's why I always say, the best jiu-jitsu guys are the wrestlers that fall in love with jiu-jitsu. Those guys are the best because from day one, they're already a beast. They're already a problem. This guy don't even know jiu-jitsu, and this guy been wrestling his whole life. They come in a problem. Yeah, you could eventually heel hook them or get on their back because they still got the habit of giving their back. But once they get that out of their blood, giving the back, once they finally get, because you can get it out of your blood. You can get it out of your blood. Once they do, shit, you're in trouble, dog, and that's coming. he'll figure it out. Yeah, you're getting him right now, but you already know. Everybody knows, like, this motherfucker, within a year, he's going to be a problem. You know, yeah. 190-pound college wrestler, NCAA, and now he's a fucking blue belt. Ooh, that's already a problem. And now he's a purple belt. Ooh, 190, purple belt, wrestled NCAA. I have wrestlers coming in, and if they come in with the right attitude, like your attitude, the wrestler that comes in using all his grappling, not to beat these guys in the jiu-jitsu class, use them to work on the shit you suck at. All your fighting off your back, wrestling up off your back, sweep body lock, sweeping, passing, be having game, sweep, at least sweeping game. Maybe you don't finish the guy. Maybe you don't like go-go's. I get it. But your bottom game at least better have some high level, like a sweeping system, like a system where it's all connected. And that's like the whole game. The whole game is, how do I get on top of this motherfucker? And then I got to pass his guard. So let's try to pass the guard in the sweep, because that's the easiest way to pass, is in the sweeps. Passing from scratch. Then when a guy's on his ass and you're standing, you're trying, how are you going to pass Paulo Miau's guard? Guys never get their guards passed. That's why they're all double guard pulling, because it's easier to pass the guard, and that's the number one goal. Got to pass the guard. It's easier to pass the guard through a sweep than it is from scratch. From scratch, you hit a ceiling. You're like, you can't, at this point, it's not going to be any guard passing from scratch. You got to think of another way to get his back, another way to get to side control, another way. It can't be passing from scratch, because nobody passes these motherfuckers guard. How are you going to pass Cobrina guard? Nobody passing that motherfucking guard. You know what I'm saying?
I would like to. I got to get out and train with some different guys, because I've been bubbled up.
Come on down, dog. Come on down. My room right now, we got these Kurdistan wrestlers. They're born wrestling and grappling, dude. I got this guy named Fedor. Fedor from Russia. Not Emelianenko, dude. This is a different Fedor. Holy shit. Dude. He's going to do a combat jiu-jitsu special match at the next Subversive. It's July 22nd in San Diego. Subversive converted to combat jiu-jitsu now, too. So slowly, I'm trying to convert everybody. I'm like, come on, dog. Why are we doing stuff? Let's add strikes. Let's make it real. It's just palm strikes. It ain't that bad. You know what I mean?
I like sub only. It exposes the deficiency in jiu-jitsu. That's exactly what I like about it. That's a huge deficiency. You know, it was so funny. Like, guys sometimes will come, can I roll with you with strikes? People ask me that, because I don't hurt people. I have very good control. And people start sitting up, I just go, and then they go to their back. Like, I'm like, this is real. Like, when you're rolling with me, it's real. I don't hurt people. I never hurt people, but I expose the vulnerability. People, I believe there's such an art to rolling with strikes. And the mindset that I follow, I think, has a lot to do with the high success rate that I achieve. The mindset is, for most people, hit the guy and go after a submission, or, you know, I don't know what the hell they're doing. My mindset is very simple. Neutralize strikes. Strike to generate behavior. The generated behavior will lead me to positional advancement or submission. Very simple.
Yeah.
Very simple.
When it comes to striking and jiu-jitsu combined in MMA, my general rule is, only strike if you don't got your clinch game on. If you got your clinch on, if you strike, you're going to lose your clinch. Like, so if you can't get your clinch, and maybe he got his clinch on, or there's no clinch, then you strike. But once you get your clinch, like if you were in the mount and I didn't have a clinch and I threw a couple strikes and then I got chopping block where I'm about to do an arm triangle, I'm not going to about to do an arm triangle, set it up, even if I just have the underhook and it's not close yet. I'm not going to start punching again, or I wouldn't want my fighters to start punching again to lose that clinch. You know what I mean? So
explain that to me again. So you're saying you're on top or you're on the bottom?
No, on top.
You're on top.
If I'm in the mount and I got head and arm, I'm not going to strike the guy. I'm going to underjack him and try to finish this motherfucker. If I strike, I'm going to lose that underhook. Like, why would I strike? I got the underhook. That's the goal. And then the underjack set up the arm triangle.
Is the arm pass, or you're just saying you just have it from head and arm?
Just from head and arm. I would never strike just from head and arm. You start working to the submission.
Can you throw knees in combat jiu-jitsu?
No, it's just palm strikes. Just palm strikes. Okay. But the crazy thing is, before EBI, I was combat jiu-jitsu was the what I wanted to do. I didn't even want to do it sub only. I wanted to do jiu-jitsu with strikes, palm strikes, just like the Brazilians did back in the day. We need to make a tournament like that. It would be way more exciting than all this. You know, I love sub only. I love Nogi Worlds. I love Abu Dhabi. But sometimes, you know, it could get boring. Some fights just ain't nothing going on. Dude can't pass the guard. Dude can't sweep. Dude can't pass the guard. Dude can't sweep. There's a lot of matches like that. It was just like, and you're thinking, damn, if we could fucking throw some strikes, that shit'll make it more realistic. One, and more entertaining. It's more
open
realistic.
Up opportunity. Open up opportunity.
Yes, it just it cuts through that little stagnant, those little stagnant zones where ain't shit going on. But if there was strikes, yes, so stagnant. It's all about entertainment. Entertainment, realism, just less boring. You know what I mean?
And yeah. What the strikes do is expedite behavior.
Yes.
That's what the strikes do. Now, because
and forces
of
forces behavior and forces
expedites behavior, right? So if you're underneath me and you're wrapping my arms, I'll just start going like this. 5, 6, 7, 8. I'm not even hitting you hard, but you start getting hit to the temple 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 15 times. Guess what? The number one thing you're going to do is you're going to let go of your hands to do something.
Yeah.
Everything is going to start because you're going to do this.
Yes. Totally. Yeah. My point was earlier is I tried to get combat jiu-jitsu going before EBI. I went to the commission. They were kind of, you know, they weren't down with like, wait a minute, you want to do a 10-minute round? No, we'll do it's below amateur MMA. So we're going to give you 3 3-minute rounds. And I understand where they were coming from. Totally get it. It was like, they didn't know what to expect. They just don't want to get sued. They don't want any problems. I get it. I try to get one 10-minute round. They said, no, we're going to give you 3 2-minute rounds. I'm like, damn, that's not like fuck, dude. And then they go, okay. 3 3-minute rounds. I'm like, damn, that's better than nothing. So I actually did a combat jiu-jitsu match inside of an amateur MMA show called University of MMA. And it's an amateur MMA show, but we had a special combat jiu-jitsu match. And the first one was Campella, and he fought, I forget who he fought, but he ended up getting a rear naked choke in the first round. Combat jiu-jitsu in the cage, when you have other MMA going on, looks like shit. It looks gangster when it's on jiu-jitsu mats, no cage. So people expect jiu-jitsu. And then when dudes start hitting each other, like, oh, shit. Yeah. God.
It's perspective.
In the cage, it doesn't look good. So I did two of them, two special matches on two separate shows. And then I decided, it doesn't look good in a cage. I have to do it in open mats. That's the only way it's going to look gangster.
It's funny how you think, because Horian thought like that with the original UFC. He wanted to put it around a moat. He goes, you know, you want that shocking visual, right? Same thing for you. You're like, the cage, it's not the proper element. If you remove that and leave it more open, it's interesting the way you thought it, because you're thinking about it from a perspective of how are you going to shoot it,
jiu-jitsu classes. Yeah, to combat jiu-jitsu to pure jiu-jitsu players is gangster. And when it's done on jiu-jitsu mats, like a jiu-jitsu platform, it looks gangster. It really does. Mm-hmm. It looks, oh, that's extreme jiu-jitsu. But you put it in a cage, and then it looks like shitty MMA. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
I gotta
get my kids here right now. I don't know how long does this podcast go?
No, dude, we could go, dude. We did an hour and a half. We're good. Do you have to take off now?
Yeah, I got to get my kids. I'd love to sit down and talk to you. It's tough for me to get out at night, but I would like to sit down and I'm happy to go down and teach to a class. It's all perspective. It's funny because I look at jiu-jitsu through such a different lens now that I want to bounce some ideas off of you from the perspective that I've gained.
Check this out. Listen, I would love to have you in combat jiu-jitsu. You got a spot. Next time we do 145, you're in. Even if you want to do 55, you're in no matter what. You already did EBI. I mean, people don't know that, but you've actually done my shows before. But my point was I wanted to do it on mat. So I said, you know what? I'll take away the strikes. I'll just do sub only. We did EBI. I went on.
I did
EBI.
My
but the problem was people were saying, you know, the retractors were saying, the haters, they were like, oh, all it is leg locks. They're just spamming leg locks. No one's even passing the guard. No one's even mounting. It's just leg locks. And they were right. I agreed with them. That's why I wanted combat jiu-jitsu. I agreed. I wanted to see guard passing with strikes. The mount, without strikes, the mount isn't that even important. It really isn't. The mount's not that important when there's no strikes. When there's strikes, the mount's huge. And if the mount's huge, then that means passing is huge. How are you going to pass the guard? It's all about how the fuck am I going to pass this guy's guard? Am I going to pass it off my ass? Or am I going to pass him off a takedown? Am I going to have to pass from scratch? How am I going to pass? The game, like, how are you going
to
pass?
Or is there a way to strike and pass simultaneously?
Exactly. That's the real shit. So anyways, so after I did 10 EBI shows, I went back to the commission. And we were having success with EBI, and I go, can I do combat jiu-jitsu on these mats? I don't want the cage, and can I do 10-minute rounds now? And they were such fans of EBI, they loved it. They were like, fuck yeah, let's do it. And they're, dude, me and the California Commission, we're tight as fuck. They're all awesome people. They love jiu-jitsu. They love combat jiu-jitsu. Mike Beltran, all those motherfuckers, they love it. So now I was like, damn, now I could do it the way I want to do it. So then I slowly brought in combat jiu-jitsu in EBI. I don't want to kill EBI. I did like an EBI 60-man tournament and then a four-man combat jiu-jitsu tournament. And I slowly brought it in. And then I did a whole EBI combat jiu-jitsu. It was EBI 17 combat jiu-jitsu edition. First 16-man combat jiu-jitsu tournament ever. Fuck, it was awesome. Thor won. John Blank, he won. It was fucking amazing, dude. The wrestler who he was crushing with rubber guard, dude. Wrestler who's his rubber guard's insane. But anyways, and then I decided, fuck it. This is too pure combat jiu-jitsu. And I left EBI in the dust. I go, you know what? I never even wanted to do that. Really, I didn't. And I
could let me tell you something. It's a great rule set. I'm very big into like sub only. I like sub only a lot. Ran some tournaments for several years there doing sub only. I liked it. The finality of it, my rule set was you lose, you're out, right? You either tap or you're out, right? Both guys lose. So it forces people to try to tap, but you decided to add the overtime rounds, which I think it's a good way to kind of finalize the match. It kind of gives us some finality, like somebody won, which
was the most entertaining. It's the most entertaining. Yeah. Like if you had a choice after a match that was close, could have gone either way, and you let the audience choose, and at every seat you had three choices. They go, how do you, we just saw a 10-minute match, they went back and forth, couple sweeps, I guess, but not many matches go like that. Do you want to A, have two guys come out with, or three judges come out with flags? B, do you want to have a wrestling shootout like Abu Dhabi and like IBJJF or like whoever gets the takedown wins? Or do you want to have a rear naked choke shootout? Dude, the audience is going to press rear naked choke shootout, rear naked choke shootout. The audience, which is a competitor, shit. They go, let's get the flags, dog. Competitors want flags, competitors. But audience, they want a rear naked choke gangster shootout.
They want finality. They want to know who's better, right? Like the flag is like,
Javi, you're in no matter what, but give me some of your top guys that are training in the strike based system. Put together a squad, and you know you're always going to have a spot or two in there. Bring in your guys.
Let me tell you something. I had to start all over, right? I had to start all over. I have some brown belt guys that are pretty good, but the machine has not started producing. I've got a younger generation of kids.
Okay, we don't have to do it now. We don't have to do it now. But in your mind, train. Your top dogs, your most competitive dogs for combat jiu-jitsu worlds, they will have a spot. All you tell me, give me their name, Social Security, all that shit. And then I put them in. I trust you. So have that in your head. Little side project, train combat jujitsu champions to prove my strike-based system is dope as fuck. I know it is. I use it. So, you know, let's prove it.
Yeah, that's the part of the phase that we're at right now. Guys that believe in it, guys who work with me know. Guys who work with me know. I've worked with UFC guys, I've worked with everybody. So guys who know, but it's a matter of time, Eddie. It's a matter of time.
That's what I'm saying. You got to prove to the world. I know shit. I know you're a bad motherfucker. Hey, Javi, I know you got to pick up your kids. Thank you very much for your story. Where can my audience reach you?
My Instagram, I have two Instagrams, at JV Jiu-Jitsu. I put up technique and pictures and lets you see kind of what the academy looks like. And then my personal, The Real Javier Vasquez, follow me there. I'm in the process right now of getting some videos together. I want to put Gerson videos together for mindset, for juicing, for strategies, for organization and stuff. So all that stuff is coming down the pipe. I am building some pretty amazing things, and stay tuned. It's starting to happen, man. Finally, it's starting to happen.
Cool, man. Thank you, Javi. I will talk
Thank
to you
buddy.
Soon, man.
Have a good night. Night. How you doing? I'm from the press.
Conspiracy about
the
space shuttle.
No, I want to be polite.
Howdy. I was just doing some filming.
What?
Anything we can see, we're just doing a documentary.
It costs NASA $3 billion per year to operate the ISS, and if they don't have a darn good explanation as to why they're faking these videos, I and the public would like a darn good explanation as to where our tax money is going.
There is no proof of gravity.
Of course, that's how science actually works, is you do an experiment that shows you what the cause of the effect is, and you can manipulate electrostatics and cause the effect of downward acceleration, commonly referred to as gravity. Of course, I've never seen a test that manipulates space-time, and you will never see that. It doesn't exist.
The world is bigger than we know.
The government is hiding more land.
They've taken our focus and put it up there and not to the outer land.
Once you start paying attention and have an open mind, then you'll start to see that it's so obvious.
So ultimately, the master plan in all of this is to fake an alien invasion.
You guys are just confused where they come from. They don't come from some far off planet trillions of light years away.
Old documents, patents, U.S. government, Russia government, German government, everyone.
They're using electrostatics and other technology to maneuver around. Maybe they're even just pulling energy out of the air.
The government is so evil that they're devising any type of plan that they can to manipulate people into one world government.
Pay attention.
What's stopping you? You've never seen curvature with your own eyes. You never felt the earth spinning. You've never been able to observe and measure these claims.
What's up, y'all? I'm in a flat earth film. It's called Level With Me. It's a masterpiece.
His new film, his new documentary, Level With Me.
Judge all you want. I'm changing the world with or without your support.
Fucking film of the year. I'm going to go out there and say it right now.
Incredible video editor. And he knows what people respond to. So he's basically using that system that this blah blah, but he's putting truth in your face. I'm packaging it. It's like an hour format where it's so gripping that you can't deny it.
You're like on the edge of your seat. It's like keeping you going. You're like, whoa, what are these guys talking about next? And we have such a shortage of that, and it's such an impactful thing where an hour can like actually change someone's life.
Next.
Sometimes when we're watching the ISS footage, you'll see the astronauts sometimes connected to like wires and harnesses.
Level With Me. Level With Me. Visit levelwithmefilm.com for more information.
Hey, dude, that film was fucking gangster. I love that shit, dude.
The Jiu-Jitsu Dojo is the ultimate training ground for life. Jiu-Jitsu will accelerate the evolution of your being, your consciousness, your soul. Through this amazing art, you will prove to yourself that you can master anything you set your mind to.
Happy birthday, Eddie Bravo.
I leave for Brazil tomorrow.
I'm Naruto Abu Dhabi.
Are you the Fear Factor guy?
I'm like 6 pounds over. Time to sweat it out.
Just imagine someone that has no idea how different your game is.
I'll tell you what this weekend was, man. It was a culmination point where all your hard work comes to like one great moment in time. You showed that you're a fucking champion, guy who goes against convention. You created your own shit and figured interesting ways to get around problems in jiu-jitsu. And shows you that great things are possible if you work hard, if you dedicate yourself and you use your creativity and you push through, your own human potential just goes up.
My 10th Planet Association has grown rapidly to over 70 academies worldwide, and their curriculums are all synced to 10th Planet headquarters located in downtown Los Angeles. I'm Eddie Bravo. I hope to see you on the mats.
You can tell it's real because it looks so fake.